All right. Hey, guys, welcome to the Search and Seizure Show. Mike, thank you for being here.
My pleasure. Good to see y'all.
You know, so we have some people online, if they still stuck around after our tech difficulties getting up and running. what's up? Yeah. What's up, Mark? So here's the deal. So we're going to do this is like a last minute show. I happen to, you know, be here for a little extra time in the studio. And so the point is we have some questions to answer.
Okay.
I also think that there is at least one person who wants to ask a question online, you know, live. You think that's going to work too, Rick, or no?
We'll find out.
All right.
We'll
find out. Here's the rules of engagement. If you guys have a question that we can help you answer, any search and seizure question, if you want us to take a stab at a statutory issue too, we'll try if we can. But really, any kind of Fourth Amendment, Fifth Amendment, Sixth Amendment, First Amendment, Second Amendment. we do have a new member of the family. I might as well start that. This is the Flux Raider. If you guys have seen this gun before, this is basically a P320 on hardcore steroids.
Yeah, there's a lot of contraptions going on there.
And this is actually what's cool about this. This is a factory gun, so it's actually put out by SIG, even though the chassis is by this company called Flux. But they took it, they OEM'd it, and it is really one of the sexiest guns I've ever seen. So this is like, for those who want to carry like a pistol brace gun or turn this into a short barrel rifle, you take this and it has either a pistol brace or, you know, if you want to SBR it, you can actually shoulder this with the little red dot on here. The cool thing is that the mag. So it has this, which is not, again, if you don't have, if it's not an SBR, if it's not a short barrel rifle, then you're not supposed to put your hand on here and two-hand a pistol.
Oh, so still
you're supposed to go like this.
But, yeah, I mean, how are you going to not?
I know.
How are you not going to hold it?
But they even put on here, not a forward grip, you know,
oh, sure.
Unless you actually register. But here at Blue to Gold, we like to ride the edge. And ATF is probably online right now recording all this.
Hey.
Yeah.
Oh, I hear
Hey, look,
ATF, at the door.
take a picture of me holding. And then what's cool about this is that let's say you're shooting, right?
Mm-hmm.
You go empty, but it has, you know, obviously the two mags. So you drop, you push this button right here and it drops the empty.
Uh-huh.
And then you grab this one and you're back in the fight.
Right back in.
And then you slap it or, you hit the slide release.
That's pretty cool.
Pretty damn cool.
Yeah, I've never seen anything like that before.
Yeah.
Pretty fancy.
Anyway, so that's the newest member of the Blue to Gold law enforcement gun family. Okay.
Brought to you by.
Yeah. Actually, yeah. Hey, Flux.
Right.
Or no, SIG, if you're listening.
Man, that's a pretty good shout out right there,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Well,
sales are probably going to go through the roof, I would imagine.
Oh, totally. And then when they see our tech skills, they'll take their money back.
Exactly.
All right. So if you guys have any questions, Amanda, what about you, Amanda? Do you have any questions? I haven't heard you get on the radio anytime.
Yeah. We talked to Amanda lately. Since we bugged her on her vacation last time, I think.
Yeah. Nah, she says I don't right now. So all right, well we got some questions then. So also Rick, if you see a guy with the last name Marshall on here, then let me know because Marshall had a question that I think he wanted to ask online or live. All right, so the first one is. A cop from Texas. Let's see what he says here. Yep. Okay. So he says, you know, I'm a police officer, you know, in Texas. If I stop a vehicle for a fictitious temporary tag, like some of these like Texas dealer tags that are so, would that give you PC to search inside of the vehicle for more fictitious tags or maybe something else, more contraband under the plain view doctrine, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we'll talk about that. But is this... He says it seems like a good search. So I guess let's lay down the ground rules, right? What gets us into a vehicle?
Could I back up just a little bit, though?
Sure.
When we're talking about this temporary tag on there, there's something that he's describing that he can tell that it's fictitious. Something's altered about it. It's not just your standard, that thing's valid. It was issued by the DMV or a car salesman or whatever it is. There's something about it that they can say, hey, there's reasonable suspicion, at least.
At least reasonable suspicion. In other words, are you saying that we shouldn't just be stopping cars with temporary tags just to make sure?
Correct.
All right.
Yeah, just want to touch on that real quick here.
Yeah, and there was a case of there was a case of the Eighth Circuit where an officer stopped a vehicle with a temp tag.
Mm-hmm.
And when he was asked in court, why did you do it? He basically said, a lot of these are fraudulent. I wanted to make sure it was legit. That's pretty much exactly what he said.
Right.
And the court said that is a straight up violation of the Fourth Amendment. You don't stop people just to make sure they're lawful. Sure.
Right.
And they actually denied qualified immunity in a lawsuit against that officer.
Yeah, and that's one of those things that, you know, we've discussed on the show a few times in here, this, these temporary tag type things. So it sounds like he's good. It sounds like he's at least got reasonable suspicion, if not probable cause. That's fictitious there. Now, moving forward into the question is, can we search the car for further evidence of that? Well, on the surface, I just, with my mind, you know, we've talked about this a lot. What are you going to tell a judge? Hey, judge, I think that there, you know, there's a fair probability that there's more evidence of what's going on here. Now, you've got this fictitious tag on the outside of the vehicle. I want to know why you think there's more evidence inside there. And he said something about plain view. Is there something that we see inside there? Are there more fictitious tags in there? Is there, you know, are they making these and selling these? I want to know why you think there's something inside that car.
You know, the way I look at this, Mike, and I think this has always been really helpful for me, and maybe it's for the audience, is I always ask myself, you know, if there happened to be a judge on scene and he taps you on the shoulder and he says, hey, officer, before you get into that car, why do you think there's more evidence in that car? And when cops say things like, well, they have a meth pipe in their pocket, you know, let's say that, you know, we do a pat down in front, and that's why, you know, they have a fictitious tag on their car, and the judge says, that's all you have? Yes, Your Honor. Then obviously that's, you know, that's not really good probable cause, right? That's not really a very articulate way of saying there's a fair probability that more evidence is in that car. Now, what if this person, that the driver, has a recent history of fraudulent documents, meaning he's been arrested for this before?
That's a piece of the puzzle. That's, you know, we talk about breadcrumbs maybe a little bit here. That's something that you can help to articulate why you think that there might be more. They're doing it now. Recency, you said, you know, it was a recent arrest, that they're continuing this crime. I think we're getting traveling down the road. I probably still want a little bit more, I think, you know, in why you think that there's right now there's evidence inside that car.
Okay. So look, you know, if you see, obviously if you see more paper tags in a car, that's good to go. If you, you know, let's say that, I'm just making this up now because it's going to be kind of hard to have, you know,
I'm going to jump in on here. I think it was a question you answered recently about the people stealing clothing from the store and whether or not they could search the car. And I think the thing you talked about, the smoking gun there, like the clothes in the back seat, if you saw the inventory tags, and you said, you know, there are no bags on there. I think, you know, those are the things that I think would help us bridge the gap in something like this, something that's showing that, hey, this is going on right now.
Yeah, I agree. And I just think you need something more. You know, okay. So one of our listeners, you know, watchers right now says, you know, in Alabama, temporary tags are only good for 15 days. Is it permissible to stop the vehicle in order to see if they're within compliance of that time frame?
So I'm guessing there's nothing that's visible on.
Hey, Mark, can you see the date?
Yeah, like, well, here in Nevada, you know, people were abiding by the regulations when they put their temporary tag on the front windshield. You know, so, you know, if you can't see it.
Oh, okay. He's saying, he's following up. He says, dealers are required to put a date on the temp tag. What if that's missing?
I don't think that's reasonable. 100%.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. Or if it's out of the date. I know that in Nevada, it changes the law. It goes from, you know, you get your temporary tag, and if it's not registered, it's now unregistered. You've moved past that window of that temporary moving permit. So yeah, definitely.
Yeah. No. Look, I would say if there's just anything off, you know,
yes,
but do not stop cars with this mentality that I'm just going to make sure it's a legit. We talked about the Eighth Circuit case.
Yeah.
There's other cases that I have. It's not good case law. We don't stop people to make sure they're not criminals.
Right. There you go.
Even though they may be driving like a Dodge Neon or a Nissan Altima. I mean, you get a good pretext.
Right. Yeah, that's almost probable cause.
Right. I mean, a Nissan Altima. If it's like, especially like an early 2000s Nissan Altima or a 300, just stop it and just see what you get out of it, you know? All right. Mark says, basically, Mark says a Charger, a Challenger. Can we just agree any Dodge product at this point? Except the Jeeps. I'm going to leave the Jeeps out of it. I don't really think the Jeeps are going to fall in my stereotype. Right. But any kind of passenger vehicle and some of the SUVs fall into my Jeeps and Grand Wagoneers are out of the...
Depends how many ducks are on the dashboard, right?
Oh, if you got ducks on the...
Because we have mutual friends here that have Jeeps and some pretty cool Jeeps here. But yeah, gotta have the ducks.
Apparently. Right, to be legit.
I think so.
Yeah, yeah. No criminals running around with ducks on their. All right. It's just one of our. It's a Nissan Altimas are the best. You're damn right on that one. Okay, so we got that question down. The next question is, let me just kind of mark that one as dunzo.
Dunzo.
All right. Okay. The next question is. This comes from an officer in. Let's see if we can figure. Sometimes they don't put the. This officer is in South Dakota, so more cows and people. So he said, investigative detentions on curtilage. He says, I'm asking if someone can be detained inside their residence in the event that they, you know, again, I'm kind of reading this and hopefully I get the, that they lock themselves inside after probable cause for an assault occurred. So I think I kind of have the gist here. You know, it's going to be a DV situation where the victim is outside. They are not, they don't want to come out and so forth. For instance, a male and a female are spouses who, with five kids in common and get into an altercation. Well, you know what the fight is about. I mean, you know.
Five kids, huh?
Five kids, man. I mean,
pick.
We need the Brady Bunch. So even they were probably fighting all the time. So the family decides she wants a divorce. The female decides she wants a divorce. Her husband, the male, begins yelling at her. He strikes her in the face, causing a visible bruise. Okay, so so far, so good. The male damages the female's laptop also during the fight. The female leaves the house with her five kids after calling 911. When deputies arrive, the male locks himself inside the residence while deputies speak with the female. So I would presume that she's probably like at a store or something.
Yeah, it sounds like, hey, I'll meet you down the street.
Yeah, she's probably not calling from the front of the house. You know, he says, at least we have reasonable suspicion, if not probable cause, has been established for the intentional damage of property and simple assault, domestic in South Dakota. Deputies attempt to make contact by knocking at the front door and calling the male. Okay. And basically, at the end of the day, he's like, hey, is excessive knocking and calling out this person a violation of his rights? In other words, you know, what kind of things should we kind of consider when we're doing these follow-ups with domestics and, you know, can we actually go in there and snatch him up? What if he answers the door? I think these are all good questions.
They are good questions.
Okay, let's start with the foundational.
Yeah, let's say foundationally, right? So it sounds like, you know, every state law kind of differentiates on what is domestic violence here, but it sounds like there's probable cause for arrest that. And most states, it's a shall arrest, which I think gets in the cops' minds a little bit here, like, we've got to arrest this guy no matter what.
Right.
All right, so... What the facts we have here, she's not in the home. She's got the whole, how many was that? Was that five?
Probably.
Five kids in tow down the street, and he's in the house. And so, you know, he says here, we talk about curtilage, right? Yep. And that was kind of where the beginning of this is. You know, curtilage is protected like the home itself, right? The Jardines case, the Jardines case there, right? So when he's in the home, that's his castle. Everybody's out of the home right now, so... Is there any exigency is always kind of my first question when it comes to these domestic violence cases. Is there any urgency, exigency, emergency that we need to get in there right now to help the kids, help the wife?
Evidence,
whatever it may be. And it sounds like no in this circumstance, right? Everybody's out, everybody's safe, and there's no further evidence that we need to gather. So the question is, can we go into his house and go arrest him for this probable cause arrest without exigency? And the answer is no.
Right.
But there's a couple things here. He did say, can we go and knock on the door to maybe clarify or ask him some questions? That is if...
Like a knock and talk.
Like a knock and talk. If it's genuinely a knock and talk. We want to get some clarifying things from him. Like, hey, I'd like to hear your side of the story. And that's truly the cop's intent of going there. I want to gather some more information. The reason why I say it like that is, if we're going there on his curtilage with our sole intent to arrest him, well, that's a problem with curtilage.
What case are you referring to?
Well, mostly it starts, well, you start from Peyton versus New York, and then you have the Jardines case that says curtilage is like the home itself. So it gives that protection outside the home. And most people don't say, hey, come arrest me at my house.
Yeah.
All right. For the most part there. There was actually a Ninth Circuit case, the Smith case, that was kind of on point there. They had probable cause to arrest this guy. They went on to his curtilage with the sole purpose to arrest him. They found a gun. They ended up losing the gun because it was a curtilage violation.
Yep.
Here, if they really genuinely want to ask some questions, you can call it a knock and talk. It is a knock and talk.
Absolutely.
If that's what we're doing here. And so they say, okay, you got to kind of, if it's a knock and talk, you got to go with societal norms, the expectation. And the Hardinius case talks about the Girl Scout rule, right? Mm-hmm. If we go and we knock on the door to try to speak with him, wait a reasonable amount of time, and no answer, we leave.
Right.
Right. We leave. There's nothing that we can do from there. He says here, this continual, now all of a sudden it changes into the cop knock, right? The baton comes out and then it's the dum, 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 dum.
Yeah, or come out to the police.
Police department, come out. You got to talk to us. Do it now. That changes things. That's not within that scope of the expectations for
the implied license.
Yeah, the implied license and society. Like, okay, now I know there's some heavy-handed Girl Scouts out there.
There are.
Right? And mm-hmm. depending on where you're at in life.
There's some heavy Girl Scouts out there.
True, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, they might be a little more heavy-handed trying to order up the Thin Mints. But if you keep pestering, you keep banging on that door, and there's that case, the French case, right? There's a boyfriend, girlfriend that talked about the mm-hmm. continual knocking on the door.
Yeah, French versus Morel.
Yeah, it became a problem.
An uninvited. You can become uninvited. So right. Let me just see if we're on the same page. So mm-hmm. the first thing that we start off with is that if you are doing an investigation, even if you have the PC, mm-hmm. she has a mark that's consistent
right.
with being battered. It's not doesn't seem to be self-injurious. You believe what she's saying to you. Maybe even the five kids also say, yeah, daddy hit mommy.
There you go.
And then, but it's still good police work to go and do a follow-up and at least ask his side of the story. Because you don't really know. Hell, he could be dead in there with a gun. You know, he could be blasted in there. And maybe her self-defense was not proportional.
I agree.
The point mm-hmm. is, let's go do a legit knock and talk. Mm-hmm. But then if he says things like, hey, get the hell out of here. And he's inside the house. You know, then you don't have a knock and talk anymore.
No.
You know, if you are the French case is a good one out of the First Circuit, where the cops there incessantly just mm-hmm. pounded on this guy's door
around the they side went on of his the house, window, banging on the window.
Then it's not a knock and talk anymore. No. Now the next thing is that somebody so if you're lawfully present, let me ask this: if you're lawfully present, you do the knock and talk, and he comes out of the home, and he's on his curtilage, mm-hmm. and he does not dissuade you from your probable cause, or he does not dispel the probable cause. He actually maybe affirms it mm-hmm. by saying, yeah, we got into an argument. I lost my temper, whatever. Can you then make that arrest?
He has come out of his home?
Yeah.
Yes.
And you talk to him?
Yes. And we speak to him?
Yeah.
Things don't change? Yes.
Yeah. You're not playing games where, mm-hmm. hey, can I talk to you for a second?
Right.
Boom, click, click, because that looks like a warrantless arrest.
Correct.
Without a warrant, you know, with mm-hmm. a warrantless arrest without any recognized exception.
Yes.
Okay. Somebody said on the chat here, hey, what if the female gave you consent to enter?
Okay. Can she? Yes. Mm-hmm. Right? She can give us consent. Let's just go with, he doesn't know that she gave us consent. We go inside the home under her consent.
Yep.
And at that point, we have lawful access.
Right. We entered the home lawfully.
Yes. Because she, who is, you know, has equal authority
cohabitant, yep.
To give us consent, she gives consent. We can go in.
Yep. I think the question, mm-hmm. Mike, that I always look at is, if you're going to be inside of a home, what got you inside that home?
Mm-hmm.
Was it agency, consent? Was it a warrant? Mm-hmm. So
that's an acronym for that, isn't it?
CREW.
Yeah,
so what we teach at Blue to Gold is CREW, consent, recognition, exceptions, and warrants. Those are the three things you need in order to be righteous under the Fourth Amendment.
There you go.
So if she gives you consent, now we're walking up to the house, okay? And she even gave us the keys, by the way, okay? And he says, stay out. We didn't even enter the home yet. Mm-hmm. What should we do?
Stop.
Stop.
Yeah.
Because now her consent, because somebody asked about it. And Amanda, did you, the OEA case, is that Randolph or what'd you put in there? Or is that Hardinus? Okay, Randolph. So so Amanda is our good little trooper here. She's mm-hmm. putting in some case law.
Oh, is that Georgia versus Randolph?
Yeah. So she put in Georgia versus Randolph mm-hmm. here. And that is the case. Briefly for our audience, give us a Reader's Digest. Just real quick, though, what happened in the principle in Randolph?
Basically, the principle behind that, people that have equal authority, husband, wife, whatever is inside of a home here, if both are present inside the home, one says, yes, you can stay. One says no. Well, the no's win. And we leave.
Okay. So Laura says, what is the case you referenced about French? Maybe Amanda can come here. Google French versus Morel mm-hmm. Merrill, maybe, 2019, first circuit.
It's quite the, it's a love story.
Is it 19? I think so. Maybe, yeah. Maybe it's a little newer than that.
When you read it, it's quite the love story.
And then Amanda, yeah, it is actually a love story. Amanda will help me with that case. And it might even be Merrill versus French, but either way, Google's going to tell you what it is. And so it's a love story because, first of all, these are two college sweethearts. And they get in, they break up, but they remain friends. He can't find another girl because there's not enough fish in the sea for this guy. And so she's kind of moved on. And he wants to see who she's dating now. So he breaks into her house at night to go get her cell phone. And he didn't break. He actually had,
the key still, right?
But it's still,
yeah, you know, still entered.
It's still entered without permission.
She's sleeping.
I had a cop in my class one time. He says, "Well, no, it's lawful." I said, "Why?" He said, "She never took her key back."
Oh, gosh.
I said, what have you done in your past to think that it's okay to go into your ex-girlfriend's house?
And how long ago was that?
Yeah, tell you, it's a past the statute of limitations because you are a perv, man. Just because your girl doesn't take back the key doesn't mean you just go in there at midnight and steal her cell phone.
Yeah, there's sneak and peek warrants and there's the whole right, future, about sneak and
future
peek.
OJ right here. Okay, so look, we're talking about this case. The last thing I want to ask you is, we know about the knock and talk. Mm-hmm. Check. We know that if she gives you consent, we can go in. And then if we get in past that threshold, and then he's on the couch with his hand down his pants like Al Bundy, he says, "Get out." Mm-hmm. Can we take him with us?
Yes.
Because you're already lawfully present.
We're in, yeah.
Now, the last thing, we know about that. We know about Georgia versus Randolph. If the no becomes, you know about his no before you enter. The last thing is, what if she's outside? Okay, this case gets a little tricky. Mm-hmm. But what if he's outside, she's outside, and she's like, "I want to go back in my home." Mm. You know, you can't stop me. Why can't you go in there and arrest him? And we're trying to explain to her, "Hey, mm-hmm. look, you know, he has rights too."
Yeah.
And then, you know, she's like, "Well, I'm going in anyway." I mean, something like that. Mm-hmm. Generally speaking, what should cops do?
Can we be her guardian angel to go back in there?
Yeah. I mean, is she creating agency, right?
She is. And I mean, if you think about it, Hey, do you have somewhere you can go? No, I don't. It's me and my five kids. Do you have any family? No. We have resources out there. Great. I don't want them. I want to go in my home. She has that right. And in doing so, there's already been a propensity for violence. He's taken action on it. The violence has actually happened to sustain the injury there. And so she goes back in. We have the right to go in and protect her from that potential violence that we know has happened, the articulation of future violence. And now we are inside the home.
Yep. Teresa, do me a favor. Can you answer Simmons' feedback and question? I'll just tell you, I can't type very well on my iPad, but Teresa got my back on this. So this officer from Texas, he says, "I'm loving this. I think this is great." He says, "I need all the training I can get, and that's why we're here. Do you all have these often?" Because he might be, you know, obviously new, right?
Oh, yeah.
"I'm not even sure how I came across this. I just got a random email."
I love it.
Isn't that cool?
What's his name?
Officer Simmons.
Simmons, welcome, my friend. We do them all the time.
Okay, so the other thing is, and then the answer is yes, by the way. We do these every week, but we just did this one kind of off the cuff because we have some extra time on our hands. Okay, so the last thing I want to just kind of confirm that we're going to be done with this question, but the thing is...
No, it's a good question because it comes up a lot.
It does come up a lot, but I would say the last one is this, you know... when it comes to like entering to pull him out so that she's safe, the courts are going to really want to, back you up on this. They want to support you because you're in a very tough spot. Do try to maybe convince the victim, "Hey, look, let's slow this down. Can you go somewhere else and let's go get a warrant?" But if you do have a situation where it's like freezing out or the kids they need shelter, they need their clothes, and you just like, and she just wants to return to her home, I don't see how that's not agency.
No.
And the Supreme Court in Randolph, by the way, which Georgia versus Randolph, did mention that they're not applying these consent rules to domestics. Like there could be agency there.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Our boy Emmanuel's here. Manny, Ricky, try to get Manny on.
Hey.
And then we're done with that question. So let me kind of mark that one done. Freaking love my boy Manny.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we got that one done. All right.
Yep.
Oh, what's up, Manny?
Hey, Manny.
Hey, how's it going, gentlemen?
Good. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday, indeed.
Thank you. Okay, cool. All right. Awesome. What you got, brother?
Hey, so I get like the Fletsy Informers. Like they sound like a former.
Man, that's a great
one. Yeah, those are they're great.
They're one of the best. Yep.
Hey, can you pause one sec, Manny? For you all that out there, go to Fletsy, subscribe to its monthly Informer. It talks about Supreme Court cases across the country.
Yeah, all federal cases, all federal circuit cases.
I mean, summaries of them and the attachment to the cases. It's just a great read. So if you guys aren't subscribed to that, then make sure you do.
Yep.
Shout out to Fletsy.
Yeah, Fletsy's awesome. Okay, go on, Manny.
Yeah. So I was reading their Informer from the December 2024, and it talks about law enforcement rendering aid following a use of force encounter. And it seems to me that a couple circuits are like, I guess, I don't know, like split.
Okay, you, like, is this the case where the guy was in a diabetic shock and they tased him?
No, there's several of them here. There's different cases they cite, like pretty much like the Informer is explaining, like, you know, what, like some of the things that they determine with, of the totality of circumstances surrounding the event to determine if the duty was fulfilled. It's like, you know, would the act of rendering aid of the police or members of the public be in jeopardy? What's going on in the scene in the moments following the use of force? More specifically, the scene's chaotic or insecure. Would the rendering of aid be fertile under the circumstance? Like stuff like that. And I kind of understand like that. And there's some cases of like, all right, well, this case, the officers called for a medic. Is that sufficient? I know it hasn't reached the Supreme Court yet, but
I know what you're talking about.
Right. So, but here's an interesting twist. Without saying the case is actually the case is going on right now. Saw a video of a shooting. Call came out for unconscious person, so they probably thought this guy was drunk. But the officers got on scene. It wasn't our department. Got on scene, and they're just looking at this kid on the ground. He was a kid. He was like 20 years old. And then, like, with the last breaths he's had, he didn't die, but the last breaths he's had because he went unconscious was like, I just got shot. And the officers called for a medic. And, like, 9.5 minutes later, the medics show up. Luckily, the kid survived, but, like, I'm just wondering, like, man, like, what training, like, you guys didn't, I don't know, I'm in the Army, so I get all the CCC training, march and all that, so, yeah, like, you know, yeah, like, this kid has a gunshot wound, and nothing was being done, like, what if this kid's dead, would, like, the police be liable?
You said this is involving your agency?
I think
it's no, not our agency, oh. Not our agency, it was another agency.
Thank God. I was gonna answer it. I wasn't going to answer it if it was. I didn't want to get you. So,
No.
Look, we can answer that. I mean, let me just take this one.
Yeah.
Okay. So, the general rule is that there is no duty to render aid. Okay. It's the government as a baseline principle, there is no duty under the 14th Amendment due process clause. Or life, liberty, and you know, and so forth, that there is no duty for your government to protect you, to help you. That's why, no insult, but most cops are not first responders or second responders. I'm a first responder because I'm responsible for my own safety.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That's the way you really should be looking at it. Manny is my second responder. If I can't protect myself, I mean, I'm just being like, that's how I look at it. Mm-hmm. That's why I love my guns and so forth. But the point, that's why I'm in incredible shape. Like I'll kick some serious ass. Right. So
no doubt.
So since the government is a second responder, there really is no duty to protect. Now there is a duty if there's a special relationship, and special relationships can come in a couple forms. The first one is when the person's in your custody. This kid who was shot is not in government custody.
No.
The other duty generally comes when the officers do something that puts the person in peril and that is foreseeable, right? There was a case where an officer stopped a drunk driver on the highway and allowed it's two cases, but this one allowed the passenger to walk to the next off ramp and got creamed because the person stumbled into a travel lane. Was it foreseeable that a drunk passenger on a closed access highway could potentially cross that yellow white line?
Oh yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
So they own that one.
Yeah.
You also probably, a lot of people saw that video where that officer saw that really drunk female walking down the highway. This is a recent video. And she was asking for, she was begging for a ride off the highway. Mm-hmm. And the cop, I can't get in his mind, but he's like, no, you know, that's not our policy. You know, maybe it was in a different town or something like that.
Right.
Wasn't willing to make an exception. And, but then the next thing, you know, the dash cam shows, oh, then she was like sleeping in the highway and a semi truck ran over. Could there be liability there? Potentially.
Yeah.
So going back to this situation, Manny, look, and you know, of course this is just a very shallow interpretation or analysis of this case. Right. But the thing I'd look for in these cases is, did the police prevent other people from rendering aid? Mm-hmm. In other words, a lot of these shooting cases, the cops are like, get back. And the family members are like, my baby. And they're like, no, we got this and so forth. Now, guess what that turns into? Yeah. You own that.
Yeah.
You know,
someone could be taking life-saving
measures.
Somebody
could be
right
doing compressions, putting a finger in the hole, whatever, you know? And so that is foreseeable harm. So the point is, that's my answer, Manny. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I agree. It's I know I just lost my train of thought. But it's Winnipeg County, right? Where
Winnebago.
Yeah.
It's Winnebago, like, you know, the RV. DeShaney versus Winnebago County.
Yeah, because you know, I saw that video, and then now recently the two officers that are charged were. I guess the guy was shot and like in a park, and they're like, "Yo, fuck this! Like, I got 30 minutes on my shift ends. We're leaving." I don't know if you saw that.
But look, I mean, when you're a union man, you know, you got your principles. You know, I mean, you want your union break. But the point is, look, it is very the Shaney versus Winnebago County is your go-to case. That's a U.S. Supreme Court case, and it, briefly, what happened there was a little boy. Was being very abused, not sexually, but physically abused, mentally abused, but physically abused by his father. The mother, you know, I guess they were split up, you know, and the mother was calling social services, CPS, please help my, you know, please, he's abusing my son. And, you know, Winnebago County did a shitty job trying to follow up on it. And they could have done more, you know, and if they would have done more, then maybe it would have saved his kids. But the father beat this kid into a coma. He actually, to my knowledge, the kid is still in a vegetative state today. Mm. I'm not sure he actually died yet, but the kid was basically living through a straw for the rest of his life. And it's a very sad case. It doesn't get any sadder. And the Supreme Court said there's no duty by CPS. They're just not. They didn't cause it. There's no. You know, you have to do something that's foreseeable. Mm-hmm. They didn't do anything that was foreseeable. I know they did not do something. They omitted doing their action.
Right.
But again, there's no duty to render aid. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, that's what it is. Brian from Texas says, as far as my medic, he's a medic. He's a triple cert, arson, police, fire. Mm. No, arson. Well, medical, police, and fire. He says, you know, he has no duty to act when off duty, but when working the LE side, how would that typically go? Look, I don't know. You know, you're going to have a professional duty to get involved. You probably you have a professional and ethical, moral. You can definitely get in, you know, all these cases. If a cop is not responding to a call, there was a case in Miami. You have the video with duty intervene where a sergeant and her squad are ignoring baby unconscious calls. They all got fired and they should be fired
because
they're drinking their cappuccino or the Cuban coffee, whatever. But as far as lawsuit goes, there's no relationship there.
Hey, Manny, in my old agency, we did spend a lot of time with tactical medical training, making sure that cops are getting CPR certified out there. And I've seen it time and time again in my old agency where the officers were, you know, forced to use deadly force, put rounds in somebody. Seconds later, they're trying to save his life.
Yeah.
You know, they're jumping right in. And again, like you say,
that's what you want to do.
Underneath the badge, we're human beings. The split second before this guy's trying to hurt you, harm you, potentially kill you. And then the second later, we jump into that trying to save you role. And, you know, there are, and I've seen it some more than just my last agency of just at least, you know, understanding how to do a little bit of first aid out there, plug some holes, pack some wound kind of things. So, you know, but they say constitution one thing, but I think there's a moral obligation.
100%. You should get in trouble, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
But again, if you're preventing help
others from doing so,
then you're also, you own that.
Yep.
All right, so Paul says it had an officer with the video evidence of a DB, disturb, what's DB?
Domestic battery, maybe?
And he says, okay, well, wait. Evidence of a DB and damage to a vehicle, maybe domestic battery, probably, that's probably what it is. He went to the house for a knock and talk to get his side on the damage of the car. She saw injuries that the suspect's hand was, that the hand was, is this our?
This sounds very familiar, my friend.
Yeah, very familiar. Is this? How funny. Okay, yes. Okay, just to let you know, I'm not going to say the state now, but this is the same. This is the call.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's, I'm almost positive this is the state. Do you want to tell a story? You want to give the context here?
Yeah, let's go with it. May or may not be the same one here, but boyfriend, girlfriend, strained relationship, things are bad right now. Boyfriend goes to a work establishment of the female, and I think you said it kind of goes on a little bit of a crime spree. Commits a domestic battery, actually, you know, physically batters the victim, puts his arm around her, kind of in a chokehold type of thing, compels her, forces her to give up his phone because he's wanting to know who she's texting.
Right, give up her, yep.
Yeah, there's some jealousy issues going on here. He takes the phone from her. This person had been trespassed from this business before. That was reiterated to him, goes out, takes a wrench, smashes out her window of her vehicle, takes a purse out of it, cuts himself. There's blood evidence inside the car, takes her purse with, her belongings inside there and takes off.
Yep.
Right? Cops respond. That's the story that we get. Hey, who is he? Where's he live? Okay, cool. Let's go. Do some follow up, kind of like we said earlier.
Yep.
Let's go see, gather some more information from this guy. So they do. They go do a knock and talk. They go to the house, knock to this guy. No answer at first, kind of like we talked about before. Yep. Knocked a little bit more, and the guy does open the door.
Right? The cops were persistent.
They were persistent,
which may or may not be a problem.
We talked about the going between
it's context-based
between the rules in there. But he does answer the door and is inside his home initially. And he's pretty adamant with the cops, in my understanding, is, I don't want to come out. I don't want to talk to you guys.
Right.
You know? And it was a little bit vague about his involvement and no involvement and what's going on here. And they're like, well, we've got evidence to arrest you, essentially. And the way it was described is he kind of had his shoulder, kind of in the doorway-ish.
Kind of like lazily just kind of like leaning. Yeah,
but it was pretty adamant, like, hey, I don't want to talk to you guys.
Yeah, but his shoulder, part of his body is outside, is in that door frame area.
Right.
At least 2 inches or so out.
Yes.
And maybe his hand a little bit too every once in a while.
I think it was described, but the officers did notice something. They noticed that he had dried blood on his hands and blood on his clothing.
Right.
And as they went on, I guess he eventually said, you know what, I don't want to come out of here. And like you said, puts his hand out a little bit past the doorway, two or three inches, hand comes out, they end up grabbing the hand and fights on.
Yeah, and they're trying to pull him out.
But he's got the door kind of propped, I don't want to come out, and it's described use of force, eventually 3 or 4 cops, melee, he's taken into custody, and from there.
And the question is was that a lawful arrest?
Well, if it's just for probable cause without exigency, we've got a problem.
Right.
And the way it was told to me is that articulation wasn't there initially. Basically, they just had PC for the DV arrest, and they body snatched him out of the home.
But can we just real quick, because that's one of the issues with this case was that actually a body snatch? In other words, when we say body snatching at Blue to Gold, what we mean is that when you have probable cause for somebody and they open the door to talk to you, then you see them almost like a plain view mentality. Then you grab them from the home.
Yeah, yank them from there.
Right. Well, we teach that is not lawful. Okay. Yeah. People can have the liberty of opening the door to talk to you without being grabbed out of their home.
There's that.
Without being body snatched.
There's a threshold between you.
There's a force field threshold.
A constitutional threshold.
But Mike, this guy was not quite as clean as that. His hand, arm was outside the home per a case called Santana. Does that give us enough to take him and pull him out?
Well, you're talking about Santana. And Santana, they decided that she, Ma Santana, was in the public,
Well, she was literally leaning in her door frame selling narcotics. So most of her body was in this door frame, mm-hmm. and also it's not a curlage issue either, right. but yeah. she was at an almost like an apartment, mm-hmm. But she was like leaning and she was having these cells. So the Supreme Court was asked, hey, are you in your house? Because mm-hmm. what happened was the cops came up and said, it's Santana.
Yeah.
Her name was Ma.
Yeah.
Ma, you're under arrest. Mm-hmm. And she ran into the home. Well, the cops then chased, and they called it hot pursuit. Mm-hmm. And you cannot have hot pursuit unless it starts in a public place.
Right.
So was that a public place?
In Santana, they decided yes for her, like, because the arrest began in the public.
Outside the home.
And they said, essentially, you can't thwart this valid arrest by retreating into the home and doing so. Plus, they're looking
for... Those actually agencies.
Yeah, they were looking for drugs.
Correct.
All right, so here... We're talking, I don't know, where are we at, Rick? We're talking, from what it sounds like, there's this much of this person
yeah.
in the public. I don't think there's direct case law on this yet, but I am not good with that. I am not good with grabbing a person's hand just because, or, you know, like, well, here's my business card.
Yeah, the cops will do this, by the way.
Yeah, and taking this much of a person in the public and yanking them from their home, I don't like
it. Are you okay with them cutting off their hands and just taking that piece of it? That's where the blood is?
Right.
So, look, no, we're not good with this because mm-hmm. that's not in the spirit of the law, right. okay? Mm-hmm. The Supreme Court did not say, well, as long as they have a pinky or more of their body outside the home, you can snatch them right. and rip them out of their home. It's not good. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the spirit okay. of the law. Let's look about making case law. Defensible actions and so forth. However, there's a twist.
There is a twist. What happened with the car? He broke the window out, right?
Yep.
And there was blood evidence in the car. When the cops showed up, they articulated that they saw blood on his hands, blood on his clothing. That is evidence of a crime that is very, very easily destroyed.
That's right.
Washed away and cleaned up. There's an exigency. There's an exigency to protect that evidence from being destroyed.
Yep. And even if these were all misdemeanors, were they all misdemeanors?
No, I believe there was. I think maybe the damage to the vehicle was felony category. There were some felonies in there
yeah.
too.
So, but mm-hmm. even if this is all misdemeanors, I'm still good with it, aren't you? I mean, not. Right, there's no felony.
Yeah. Right.
yeah. Mm-hmm. In other words, destruction of evidence. Mm-hmm. This is not a you know, if the guy was accused of throwing a cigarette out the window mm-hmm. and he's at his house and now he has a pack of smokes in his pocket, you know what I mean?
Right.
This mm-hmm. is a he. I told when I analyzed this case, mm-hmm. I told the person on the phone. I said, it sounds like you went on a little crime spree.
Yeah, it was. It was a series of things happening. It wasn't a one off. It was a battery, potentially a robbery,
yeah.
Destruction of property. Auto burglary, you know, there was quite a few things that are taking place in this.
Yeah, he stole two cell phones. Mm-hmm. Paul, that's our answer. We are good with it under exigency for destruction of evidence. Do you have any follow up on that, Paul, or you think that answers the question? And somebody named Eric says, sorry, gents, I have to leave. We got a pursuit.
Oh, man.
Manny, like... you work in Maryland. Have you ever been in a pursuit, Manny? How many have you been in a pursuit, my man? Not in the military. I'm talking uh-huh. about on the streets of Maryland.
Uh-huh.
Paul was the sergeant involved in that
case.
Hey,
Paul.
Oh, nice.
think about how cool that comment
is. Paul, if we got any of this wrong, you let us know.
And
we can talk offline too, Paul, if you want my phone number, if you don't already have it. But go ahead.
Think about how cool that comment just was now. Gotta go. I'm going to go chase the car down.
Yeah, totally.
I love that all our cops out there are doing the job,
yeah.
doing the thing.
And listen to our asses.
Yeah, listen to us and like yeah. then going out there and
do you know how,
kicking
like,
some ass.
Just... Do you know how bored you got to be to have the search and seizure show on right now?
We do a good job.
Okay, so this next question is from an officer. Where's this officer from? Sometimes Minnesota. Okay, so a circuit case, Miranda in custody question. The scenario was, I was debating with another coworker, was this. You respond to a domestic and outside the residence, you hear a female screaming, stop hitting me. You open the door and see a female with obvious signs of injury from what you assume is being struck, right? It makes sense, right? Mm-hmm. They call that cooperation. Based on the totality of the scenario, you already have probable cause for domestic arrest on the male half. The debate question is this. Is Miranda required now for the male before any questioning since you already intend to be arresting him? Originally, my answer was no, we don't need Miranda. The male would not be detained straight away. Well, you know, he might be detained, but
yeah,
he's not free to, you know, if he tried to walk away, he probably would be, but you know, but even if he doesn't, even if he doesn't know that, I guess, you would separate the both parties, interview them like any other normal domestic. You don't quite know what's going on. Since the male is not being detained in handcuffs, okay, he was not being formally arrested. He is in his own house. There's a normal two-officer response to a domestic, so there's two people there. I do not see custody issue. So I want you to answer that. The second question is, if you already have PC for an arrest and intend to make that arrest, you can't question the individual without Miranda due to your intent. Okay, I think they're kind of interrelated.
Yes,
so
I think so.
Do you need Miranda for these domestic violence investigations under these with facts like this?
But not always, right? And not always. And we don't teach tactics here, but it sounds like the dude should be in handcuffs. But he's not for the scenario, okay? Not always. There's, when we talk about Miranda, and this, it comes up a decent amount of times here, there's, you know, basically three components that come with Miranda. You know, okay. It's but we'll go back to arrest like custody. But arrest like custody, right? You know, imminent interrogation and known officer. You know, you're wearing the outfit, so that one's always the easy one here. The imminent interrogation are questions designed to elicit an incriminating response. You know, are we asking things that could be used against them? Testimonial evidence against them in the future.
Right, help prove their guilt.
Okay, but always the big part of Miranda is going to be the custodial aspect of it here, and we get that a lot, where that not free to go aspect versus really what we're looking for is arrest like custody. It's more confining. It's more than that not free to go aspect here. So in the way he's describing this one here. The probable cause is there. They didn't place him in the handcuffs right away. They didn't restrict his freedom of movement. Didn't make statements like you're under arrest while they're under handcuffs. So for argument's sake, let's say they didn't create an environment of arrest like custody. They said it's in his home, you know, the conversational tone and asking him. So as long as you're comfortable with articulating that you didn't create an arrest like custody, Miranda doesn't apply. Right? But then he talked about this getting into the noggin, right? The subjective intent, the probable cause. I've already got my probable cause. I know I'm going to arrest this person. Do I have to read Miranda then? And the answer is no, unless you have communicated that to that person, that you've taken actions or measures to show, hey, you know, you're going to be under arrest. You've confined that arrest like custody. The DUI case,
McCarthy, hold on. It's called, Berkemer versus McCarty.
Berkemer versus McCarty. And the reason why I'm bringing this one up is a DUI case. The officer, you know, swerving, tons of indicators there under the influence of alcohol or drugs, approach, all the factors. In the cop's mind, they knew I've got probable cause to arrest. However, they still were asking them questions. They were, you know, going through all the stuff that, you know, Miranda didn't apply. It didn't need to be read, even though subjectively they're thinking, I know I'm going to arrest you. Because, you know, they didn't take those, they didn't create that arrest like custody component there.
As a former trooper, you know, I mean, you have some of your own similar stories, but as a former trooper, I can't tell you how many times I would stop somebody, Nissan Altima, and go up there and look at this guy or girl and say, I know you're going to jail today. Mm-hmm. You are so drunk, you know, your driving pattern. I can see it in your eyes type stuff. But of course I'm going to play the game, you know, hey, can I talk to you outside the car? I put him to the fields. I'm building a solid case, right?
Yes.
I can also tell you out of the thousand, you know, I want to exaggerate here, but let's just say 1,000 DUI cases I've either directly been, you know, mine or been involved in on scene, just helping.
Because those are felony in the trooper world, right?
We're misdemeanor cops in a felony world. And the, you know, I think that Miranda, at least in my cases, the 100 or so cases that I've had, you know, I think I've read Miranda like 3 times. Mm. Because once I made that arrest, the case is already done. Even if I'm like on the way to jail and I'm talking to him about, man, you know, you said you had 2 beers. You're probably an 8 beer guy. Even if he says, yeah, you got me. I did a 24 pack today. I may put it in my report and it may be impeachment evidence, but I don't need that to prove my case.
No, you've already built it.
I've already built it. So, but I knew he was going to jail, and that's the point.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So that's the, oh, then was there, there was a follow-up question. Make sure that I got it all, or you got it all. The other thing was, right, you answered the question. Even if you, you know, McCarty also says, even if you know you're going to arrest them, it's not in play. It's not what you think, it's what they think.
Right.
Also, we also teach here that, you know, that that somebody in handcuffs is not necessarily in arrest-like custody. Not as long as you have a real good reason for putting handcuffs. Mm-hmm. Also, in a case called, help me here, the Supreme Court case out of California, the Behealer.
Oh, yes.
also, you know, when you tell the person clearly that they're not being, they're not mm-hmm. under arrest.
Take the sting out of it,
you
right?
take the yeah. detention out of the custody, mm-hmm. or the custody out of the detention.
There you go.
Finally, a good case on this is U.S. versus Griffin. It's 8th Circuit, 1990, and I think that's part of, that's what we're just saying here. Okay, is Mark on? Yeah, yes. What state are you in?
Arizona.
Nice. What you got?
Pretty simple question. And so routine patrol, car in front of you, that Nissan Altima, you see a passenger throw out a cup. It explodes, ice goes everywhere, you got littering. All right. With just that violation, stop the car, talk to the passenger. Hey, yeah, I just threw it out. I didn't mean to. I'll go pick it up. Is there any case where we would ID that driver with no civil traffic, no traffic law?
Okay, so I'll take this first round. Not that I can find, but I'll tell you what I teach. I teach that you cannot compel that driver to identify. You know, I know a lot of people are going to be like, you know, they don't agree with me. Mm. But my thing is, you know, it is a traffic stop. Let's go through some principles here. It is a traffic stop, and we treat traffic stops like Terry stops. And what the court meant by that is that it's a low level of intrusion. The next thing, we also have Rodriguez, which is a Supreme Court case that tells us that the length of a traffic stop is enough to take care of the mission of the traffic stop. Mm. Our mission is that passenger. Yeah. He's the one why we're contacting that person. And finally, you know, we also know from a case from the 1970s, and this is not a U.S. Supreme Court case. It's actually like a case out of Georgia where it's the principle helps here, even though it's not the same. But the cops were stopping people for no reason, just to actually thank them for their good driving. It's kind of funny. They actually were giving like coupons out and stuff like ice cream and shit like that. It's actually kind of funny.
Right.
They're good hearted, but the court said that was an unlawful stop.
Yeah.
And the reason I say this is that at the end of the day, we know that we can't just stop drivers. And drivers, you know, they are going to be stopped and detained because of the passenger, but they're not, they didn't do anything wrong here. And so I know that if I stop a driver, I can't demand the passenger to identify.
Correct.
So why is the reverse not true?
I agree with you, Ed.
And, you know, I know we're going to have a law in Arizona that says that drivers must surrender their license upon demand.
Mm-hmm.
But look at, again, it goes back to that intent. The intent is not, that when they pass that law, and under the Fourth Amendment as well, it wasn't like, oh, if your passenger messes up, you're going to identify yourself too. Yeah. They didn't do anything wrong. There's no reason to believe they're not licensed. And so that's what we teach here at Blue to Gold for that scenario. You can ask. Absolutely, you can ask, just like you can ask the passenger.
Of course, yeah.
But if that driver says anything like, he's a 10-2 guy, hey, I have nothing to do with this. My friend is the one that has a littering problem, not me. You know, and he does not say, I don't have a license, doesn't say, you know, any kind of verbal PC. Mm. He just says, look, you got a problem with my passenger, take it up with him. And then once you're done with him, I want to be let go. Mark, at that point, I don't think the cops should arrest him for anything. I think they should just let him go.
I agree. Yeah.
What do you think?
Perfect. And then drivers are seized throughout the traffic stop. Like, any
other? Oh, they're not free to leave.
Perfect.
Yep, they're definitely not free to leave. So just like the passenger's not free to leave in Arizona, neither is the driver.
Yep. Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Yep. And then the last thing is, of course, the easiest way to identify that driver, and I think you should be okay, is to run the VIN or run the RO. The RO.
Right.
And hopefully that's him.
Yeah, because, I mean, more than likely when you call out that stop, you're running the license plate.
So, if there's any other violation, then, you know, take care of business.
Yeah, it comes back to the warrant. If that person matches.
Yeah, the matches, then maybe you can do a warrants check. I mean, you know, this should be okay. You know, Arizona's in the 9th Circuit. There are some cases that support that idea. But no matter what, Mark, I do want to tell you one thing. Mark is gone, I think, already. But no matter what, do whatever you want. because that's what Arizona's known for. You guys make the worst case law. You guys really kicked it off hard with Miranda. You haven't stopped since with Arizona versus Gans, Edwards. What's the other one that was I saw the other day? Just another bad case law. No, you guys, Mincy was after Miranda. Yeah. You guys are searching a damn crime scene of a cop killer for 4 days without a warrant. So, Mark, do whatever you want. keep the U.S. Supreme Court busy. Uh-huh. All right.
Arizona versus
it's Arizona versus here. You know it's going to be a shit show because Arizona cops are kind of cowboys out there. Yeah, it is the Wild West, Laura. All right. So who's up on deck next? And while you're looking at that, let me read another question. Okay, this question comes from an officer in Idaho. Okay, so I routinely make passenger side approaches on traffic stops, and a lot of semis, he might be like a commercial enforcement guy, have manual crank windows.
Right?
Okay. So they're a little older, maybe, whatever.
For your younger officers out there, that's when you had to do to roll down the window in a car.
Life was hard.
Oh, I tell you.
These babies, man.
Burn your head. Burn yourself on the seatbelt.
Totally. Semis are also very high and impossible to see into unless the door is open or you stand on the side and you put your head in front of the window. You know, I don't want to be that close or vulnerable. So I always open the truck door so I can see the driver and communicate without compromising officer safety and can retreat quickly if I have to. Is that okay?
I've never pulled over a semi. I'm guessing you have.
I was a trucker fucker.
I think that's the professional terminology for that there, right?
That's what the feds call it.
But it seems like, everything he's doing here is, if you step back and look at the reasonableness of why he's doing it, there's not to gather evidence or information in there. He's worried about safety. I'm trying to think about my approach if I were to stop one, which I probably wouldn't, but I don't know. Is there a reasonableness in all those actions?
So I think the answer is yes, it is reasonable, but because the officer is going to testify, well, look, okay, back up though. Let's make sure that we are at least given an opportunity for the driver to do what he's supposed to do. But I don't want to go out there and say, okay,
right. Just popping doors.
Yeah, Your Honor, if I pull over semi truck,
I'm popping doors.
I can pop a door, you know?
No.
It's under these circumstances, semi trucks are long. When I went up, it's an older semi truck. In my experience, these are one of those roll up window things. Mm-hmm. And such as a big cab, I'm not going to do a driver's side approach because it's too close to the travel lane and I can't retreat. I can't get behind anything if something bad happens. So I do a passenger side approach. By the time I got up to there, this old vehicle, window's not down. My alternative is, safety-wise, is to open up the door.
Mm-hmm. But you work your way through it. Yeah.
We do have similar cases, where officers are opening doors because they cannot see inside of a car and the guy will not roll down the window. We have officer safety cases like that that the court upheld, but they had a reason.
Right. But don't just throw the blanket for officer safety on it. Articulate reasons that it's unsafe, and is there anything else you could do to make it safer before you move
forward? And the court may ask you, if you were so concerned about your safety, why not just call them out? But again, a semi truck is hard to do that.
True.
You're going to do it from 80 feet away, right. Driver, I think it's reasonable. Yeah. It'd actually be the easiest way to handle this, frankly, would be if the... Stop messing with semis.
Did you have your tread depth meter reading?
Yeah, I had a penny. Actually, pennies don't work on semi trucks, but you have like a silver dollar, people didn't know what I'm talking about. Yeah. In the old days, maybe new days, you would take a Lincoln, a penny, Lincoln, and if you could, you would put the Lincoln head upside down, and if you can see the entire part of Lincoln's head, the depth was too low.
Too low.
you ever heard this or no?
I knew there was some. I knew you could use a coin to measure it. I didn't know what the demarcation line was on.
See, you were like a high speed narcotic officer, but when you hear me talk, you're like, God damn, this guy's hot shit, huh?
That's hot shit.
You're kind of impressed, aren't you?
Very much so.
Yeah, you thought you were the only one that was high speed, low drag around here. Okay, we got that one answered. Hey, Marshall.
Marshall.
What's your first name? It's not Marshall.
It's Dakota. David.
Huh?
Dakota.
Oh, Dakota. I was about to say, I thought you were from a Ute. I thought you were a Ute, and you are a Ute. You're not from South or North Dakota. You're Dakota. Hey, Dakota, what's up, man?
Two quick questions. So the first one relates to traffic accident investigations. So I'm a state trooper in Utah. We do a lot of those crashes.
Yep.
And there is a bunch of upper administration agreement going on that I don't feel comfortable with, where they say you can compel any passenger in a car that's involved in a crash to ID.
Yeah. I've never agreed with that. Look, I can tell you that I have plenty of case law that deals, that talks about how you deal with witnesses. Mm. And so, you know, I think the two doctrines that people try to argue here is that A, they're a witness to a crime, mm-hmm. and we'll talk about that, and or B, that you guys have your forms by the state to fill out, and we have to know who's in the car.
Right.
Okay. So, but that's called a victim, you know? So, you know, you list your victims in there, but either way, when it comes to either a witness or a victim, and you don't have probable cause or reasonable suspicion they contribute to this accident, then you got to be very light hands with them, you know? Well, and also I do have a 10th Circuit case that's, again, it's not exactly this issue, but the 10th Circuit case came out of Utah where cops detained some parents after they witnessed their son being shot by the police.
Oh, yeah.
And they were held for, you know, and again, it's not the same case, but the principles are, it's the logic though, is that when you're dealing with the witnesses or victims, you have very limited authority over them.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's talk about the first thing and, you know, this whole, hey, they are a witness argument. Okay. Yes, it is in the government interest to try to identify witnesses to a crime.
Yeah.
Traffic mm-hmm. accidents could be a crime. They could have ran a red light. They could be intoxicated and so forth. But there is no authority to detain people and on threat of arrest or obstruction to identify them just because they witnessed a crime. I witness crimes every day when people, you know, driving reckless and stuff like that. Right. Can you pull me over? Hey, you know.
Yeah.
And so there is authority to detain temporarily a material witness. Mm. And a material witness, you know, Dakota, is like somebody who you can't live without. You know what I mean? Like somebody, and it's also a serious crime. So if you have a fatal DUI, absolutely. Let's push that one. You know, let's ride that one on the edge and get that passenger identified, because they probably have material information about how that accident occurred. How much did this driver drink at the bar? What did they say after the crash? What was the context about what they messed with their phone and so forth? So Dakota, would you agree that if it's a material witness, you know, they really can provide context for why this crime occurred and it's a serious crime, then we can probably force that one?
Yeah, for sure. I definitely think so. I just think that in a general sense, if you've got a busload of people and they start skedaddling out of the parking lot of Maverick, then you're not going to track them down.
No, and you're not going to track them down. And if they don't want to be a victim, like, you know, look, I worked in Vegas and we would have these like taxi cab crashes. And, you know, some people would be late for the airport or whatever. They would have already called another taxi, or, and then like, hey, look, I don't want to be part of this. I'm not injured. I just want to, even if they are injured, if they're, you know, whatever, right? They don't want to be a victim, which is dumb, because you want to be injured in a cab.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that's big money. Exactly. But the point is, I've had people say to me, look, I don't want to be involved in this. I got a flight to catch. That's more important than me being listed on a crash report. And you know what I say to them? Deuces. See ya. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
I'm not going to arrest them or detain them or threaten them.
Right.
You know, that's on them. And if they later want to sue the cab company and they're not on that listen to report, that's not, then, you know, then I guess you can ask for the body cam or something like that. So the other thing is, you cannot force people to be a victim. So even if you don't say, well, they're not a witness, but they're a victim, and the state needs to know who this passenger is and, you know, for track. No, you cannot force people to be victims. You cannot force anybody to be a victim, quite frankly. Now, to participate, victims don't have to participate, even though, I can get into the weeds there. What I teach here, Dakota, is this. On your crash report, for people that don't want to identify themselves, you do the best job with the demographics, white male. You can, maybe leave the age blank, because you're not going to know that. You put in there what you can. And no, if they say, I go by Billy, what's your last name? I'm not telling you. Then you put Billy on there, and that's it. You know, and that's what you do. What's the alternative? Like, what are you going to say that you can actually back up? You can say, well, if you don't give me your information, I'm going to arrest you.
You're obstructing
my investigation. Is that the alternative there, Dakota, that they're kind of maybe implying that they can be arrested for something?
Yes, that's what I've been told before upon discussions with some other people, but obviously it's something that I wouldn't do. I don't feel comfortable with that. They've right. also cited stuff like insurance related things, potential insurance fraud later on or something where somebody claims yeah. injuries afterwards and they want documentation that they were there. I just think it really just doesn't matter. Like if they're not,
that's not insurance fraud. Not yet. Right, we don't yeah. know. Just be, you know, in fact, it's the opposite of insurance fraud, because yeah. if you have a person who does not want to be in a report, mm-hmm. that tells me that they don't want to commit insurance fraud.
Yeah.
they just made their job a lot harder to get collecting. Like yeah. you're a ghost. You weren't even on scene. Yeah. Like according
and
to the
now
cop.
Now you want recourse.
Now you yeah. want money. Yeah. And so you don't have, look, that's a whole what if situation. It doesn't answer the question of what reasonable suspicion or probable cause you have about this guy right now. And in Utah, the great state of Utah, by the way, you have no law on the books that I'm aware of that says passengers have to identify themselves. Right. So, right, you may have a stop and identify statute, but that's for criminal activity. And these yeah. people are not involved in criminal activity at that point, unless it's, again, a very serious crime that they may have been involved in.
Yeah.
Yeah. The closest thing we've got is State v. Martinez that allows us to ask for identity yes. of anybody in the car.
Yep.
But that's
there
it.
You go. Absolutely. Absolutely. And you should be asking. In fact, if you don't ask, you actually may get in trouble because you're not doing your job, and you should be asking to complete this form that the state wants you to. Mm-hmm. But when they say, I don't want to identify myself, and you don't have reasonable suspicion, it's done. I mean, you know, you can try to put a little mm-hmm. pressure on them, mm-hmm. but if they don't want to comply, then it's done. I would not be threatening them with arrest. That's kind of ridiculous. Mm-hmm. It might be coercive.
Yeah. And make a notation of that. I asked the front seat passenger for their information. They refused.
Yeah.
And
yeah, then you go. Yeah, exactly. That hurts them when they do want to get a check mm-hmm. later. But that's the answer.
I do have one more quick question if you've got a couple minutes.
I do. And sure. The camera turned blank. I don't know if that on your end, but go on.
So the next okay. one is recently arrested a guy for DUI. Ultimately, he consents to intox. We get that. We transport him to the hospital. He ultimately overdoses while we're at the hospital. So I think he was going up or possibly had something on board that he popped while he was in the car.
Yep.
So ultimately he's unconscious. The doctor does his best to kind of get the guy reawakened during the investigation and everything while I'm waiting to get clearance. So anyway, the question basically is, the kid talks with the doctor about drug use while I'm there.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Am I allowed to use that information as probable cause to request a blood draw warrant? Because there's enhancements if there's drugs and alcohol here.
Yep.
So is that protected information, him and the doctor, or no?
Are we overhearing it?
Yeah, you're in the room.
You're just in the room?
Yeah, while he's getting medical.
Yeah. You don't have an expectation of privacy when you're speaking out loud where someone, you see that the cops can hear it.
Well, the argument's right. going to be HIPAA. The well, argument's going to be like, hey, I'm talking to my doctor. Yeah, and I'm talking to my doctor. You're being Mr. Nosy over here.
But hey, I want out you go while I talk to my doctor. I don't know. I feel like if we're there and we hear it,
You don't have to plug your ears. And also, mm-hmm. You think the cop is going to be like, the guy is under arrest.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So do you think the cop is going to leave the room?
No.
They're not going to.
Yeah.
So I have your answer on this. I have researched this. The answer is that this is good to go on two issues. Number one, this is not a HIPAA violation. That's what most cops, mm-hmm. and I got to tell you, I'm a lawyer and I barely know what HIPAA is. You know what I'm saying? And I got cops out there saying, oh, that's a HIPAA violation. What do you know about HIPAA?
HIPAA is bigger than it actually is.
They hear HIPAA and they just want to throw out HIPAA because it makes them feel like that.
Yeah.
Like, HIPAA is the most complicated statute known to man. Like, but I do know there's an exception for cops that are doing their job with a prisoner. Okay. They don't leave the room. Mm-hmm. That's an exception to HIPAA. So that's the first thing, is that you are allowed to be in the room. A, because it's your prisoner, and B, it does not violate HIPAA. The second thing is that this is not even a Miranda violation, because as Mike said earlier, you have to have three things for a Miranda issue to even be, to require Miranda and a waiver. You have to have in custody, they're in custody. You have to have a known officer, and you have to have interrogation. The known officer rule means that the person asking the questions is a known officer. Mm-hmm. This is not a known officer. This is a doctor asking the questions. And that doctor can ask anything incriminating that he wants, because it's not interrogation for him.
Right.
It's mm-hmm. medical questions.
Yeah.
So everything that you hear, put in your report, it's good to go. And it contributes to your blood draw and everything else. And Brian says it's not a HIPAA violation. He is definitely the smartest person in the room when it comes to medical issues. Yeah. Okay. Unless Rick says we have another question from somebody, let me see this.
Lost it again.
Yeah, I don't know. It's maybe have a loose. All right. So let's read this question. You walk into the interior stairway of an apartment building.
Okay.
Local drug users like to sit in these stairways to smoke. Okay. Mm-hmm. Sounds like a nice place.
Yeah.
You enter a known drug user is sitting on the step. This guy's like very, it's like step by step, you know, mm-hmm. on the step.
He's actually doing a good job describing the sitch.
Mm-hmm. On the step beside their leg is a small piece of foil with black residue. You know this to be consistent with narcotic residue.
Okay.
You did not see them holding the foil. It's simply on the step. It's also kind of a known place, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like you go to San Francisco and there's needles all around. Doesn't mean it's your needle. I know some great officers who say you have probable cause now that individual has narcotics on their person. They would search them. If they do not find drugs, they let them walk away. And let's add, you do not have their consent. What is your opinion?
That's very riveting. Like this.
Story, it's actually good.
I was there.
You gave me enough facts to like really make a decision here.
Yeah. Well, okay. So all those facts going on here, we're just always going to have to bridge this gap when we're search incident to arrest this person. Do we have probable cause and we are physically arresting that person? This is when we talk about search incident. We're transporting this person to a jail facility. That's mm-hmm. that triggers search incident to arrest. But here it sounds like we're wanting to do a probable cause search of this person based on all these.
Mm-hmm. Do you have probable cause?
Right. Well, you're going to have to tell me and or like we said earlier on today, a judge on your shoulder, why you think that there is evidence on this person in their pockets, wherever it may be, and that there's an exigency that this evidence is going to be destroyed mm-hmm. if we don't recover it now and prevent that destruction of evidence. So, okay. And there's a bunch of factors he's got going on right now, you know, the area, maybe you know this person for drug use, the observations you have of them, they look like a current drug user, maybe they're exhibiting signs.
Answer the question though first. He didn't say anything mm-hmm. about that. Mm-hmm. I want to build a mm-hmm. cake here. The base layer here, guy sitting on its steps, mm-hmm. known drug area, piece of foil next to him with burnt residue. Mm-hmm. Is that probable cause for him?
No.
Because again, mm-hmm. I if I go to San Francisco and to teach, mm-hmm. okay, I know you want to make a joke about that.
They've got great sourdough there.
I've had great times. Mm-hmm. Like I went to San Fran, I mean, mm-hmm. freaking 20 years ago. Maybe more. And it was a great, what a great city.
A couple years ago. It had a fantastic time.
But it's a drug haven right now. Yeah. And I haven't used drugs in weeks, so I have no interest in going there. So, but if I did go there and I happened to be sitting, renting an Airbnb, mm-hmm. and it's not a nice Airbnb, and I sit on the steps and there's a needle next to me with a residue in it,
right.
and a cop sees it, you're not arresting me.
No.
You're not searching me. And a lot of cops are like, what we do is Blue to Gold. I think it's very important. I really think it's important because a lot of cops take what I say or take what you say and they're like, nah, man, that's not true. Like, oh, that's no, I have PC all day long. And what they're doing is they're transforming or they're using their prior experiences and they're like using it through that lens. And mm-hmm. I say, but look, yeah. I need you to break this down. Like, mm-hmm. what about me, Larry Suit Leisure? In a suit, and I just happen to be at the Airbnb. Well, yeah, I guess I wouldn't have probable cause for you, but generally speaking, we do have probable cause. And I say, why?
Why?
And they'll start talking. Then they'll start saying,
yes.
Because he's a known drug user. I know this cat. When I saw him, he went like this and tried to sit on it. You know, and I'm mm-hmm. like, okay, that's why you have probable cause.
Right.
Not because it's a piece of foil next to something in a public space, mm-hmm. like a...
It's a start.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's the lesson here, is that cops need to break things down when they say things in a report, okay? And they say, I did this and I had probable cause for that. I'm going to take you. I don't have a crystal ball. I'm not there. I'm only going to evaluate, but based on what you told me.
Mm-hmm.
Guy sitting on the steps with these facts is not probable cause. Maybe it's reasonable suspicion.
Yeah.
But it's not probable cause.
No.
And so add those other facts. You know, I'll give you a great, mm-hmm. I've been having a huge debate. And I've been, people have been trying to smack me around a little bit because they're like, they're trying to push back on me, which is totally fine. I love it. I respect it.
Makes it fun.
It makes it fun. I respect them trying to, try to take down the guru over here. But I made a comment about if your VIN is covered That in and of itself, Teresa, do you know about this? Teresa's on here. Mm-hmm. Teresa, how many people have been getting riled up about this whole VIN issue, right? People are like, no, you know, so I said on the show, I said, if your VIN is covered, mm-hmm. just that in of itself is not a crime. Meaning if you walk through a parking lot and you see a VIN covered, like just has a piece of paper over it, mm-hmm. That is not going to satisfy your statute that you have obliteration, destruction, intentional concealment, right? Mm-hmm. And I just said, and people have been really, oh, that's not true in New Mexico, and that's not true in Ohio. And they started talking about, they gave me their laws. And every time I looked up their law and I looked at the case law, I'm exactly right. The court, there would be like, this court will say, it's not a crime just to have the VIN incidentally covered. It's mm-hmm. a crime to conceal, destroy, and remove, and so forth. And so the point is like, listen to what I'm saying. And I said to the, you know, and I said, this example, break it down to, if I go and take my car to a valet and they put a valet, you know, tag, whatever, on my dash and it slips and it covers my VIN. Mm-hmm. And then a cop is walking by my car and sees that the VIN is covered. Can they open my car and start searching my car? No. And I said, because there's no intent there. Where is the intent? Mm-hmm. And they're like, well, that's, you know, blah, that's not what mm-hmm. we're talking about. I said, exactly. Because you're talking about people that, you know, have no plates on the car and the VIN is covered up and maybe the rivets look weird when you can see. The point is, articulate.
Yeah, there it is.
Break it down to its basics.
There it is.
Yeah, Teresa put in the Instagram of like this debate going on where people are trying to take down the master over here and you know, kick me while I'm down. Mm-hmm.
That's what's so great about the Fourth Amendment and search and seizure is this, the dialogue, the conversations.
You know? And I love it.
It's great.
And all these people that have, been getting their riled up online, I actually love it because they actually are, by sharing these laws, they're learning and they're trying to find out that
and
context.
We're talking about it.
Exactly.
You know, and that's fantastic.
It is fantastic. So look, we've been going at it for almost, well, Rick got us started a little late, so probably wouldn't have been probably at it for 20 minutes by the time we started.
Time flies when you're having fun.
Time flies when you're having fun. So the last thing, does anybody have any other questions before we call it a day? You're welcome, my friend. Anything else? Okay. You're welcome. Absolutely. All right. Well, Mike, I appreciate your time.
Appreciate yours. And thank you all for your time.
Yep. Thank you guys. I will put this on YouTube and please follow us on social media. Teresa, our social media manager, works her ass off, really trying to get all our content out there. She's on almost all these channels and so forth. So Teresa, keep, you know, putting in the social media links. Rick, thank you.
You're awesome, Rick.
For your amazing job.
I want to know how the pursuit went. So if anybody knows who that was.
Yeah, Manny didn't answer.
Yeah, let us know how that pursuit turned out. That's going on right
now. Yeah, Manny. Manny didn't know what a pursuit is. Maybe, you know, Manny knows what a foot pursuit is.
Ah, there you go.
But no vehicle pursuits. All right, hey, we're getting a lot of hearts too, by the way. I think they're for you.
Nah.
I think the hearts are for you.
It's for us. It's for Blue to Gold. It's the family.
All right. I hope they're for me. It's okay. Cool. All right. So, and I get the thumb. The thumb is for me.
I like
okay?
it.
All right. So thank you guys. I appreciate it. Rick, let's shut it down and have a good weekend. We'll see you guys next week.
Take care, everybody.
See you.